You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
And what are you going to do with this?
I thought this was a freaking joke.
I'm a little bit worried that we're taking a nail file to a gunfight.
I took a semester of Sanskrit.
It looks just like Hazard the Pervert.
You know what the metagame's always ready for? Pox.
Some of it not so friendly, unfortunately.
Oh, you brave soul, it's another episode of TryHards. Hopefully you'll survive a little bit better than that weird cat Matt has that's always hiding out in the corner. I'm Sean Seacrest, along with Brian Tibbetts and Matt Hurley. We are the TryHards, and we get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? Guys, Matt, I know you always have to chase that weird cat around, so that means you got to be drinking to keep yourself together, right?
Right now I'm drinking the growler of the 60-minute IPA. Got four growlers on Saturday, and on Sunday I had one growler left. I was a little hungover Sunday, and this is the 60-minute that I had left.
Go ahead and tell the backstory on the weird cat. We may have told this months ago when it happened, but we can get a refresher out there.
When these two idiots came down and they flew the plane down here, the pilot is just, he's always so matter-of-fact and drinks, you know, a load. We're sitting around, and he knows I have a rabbit. And for all you listeners out there who don't know, I have a pet rabbit that he lives in a closet under the stairs, and then we just let him run around when we're around. So he was running around. He goes, "Hurley, what's wrong with your cat? That's a weird-looking cat," or something like that. I don't remember exactly what he said. I go, "That's because it's a rabbit." And everyone just kind of shut up and looked at and started laughing. I'm not 100% sure wasn't 100% serious, too, because he may have been a few drinks in at that point.
Brian, what are you drinking in Galesburg tonight?
I'm going a little softer tonight. I've got the Baraboo Lager. It's the Red Granite Lager from Baraboo Brewing Company out of Wisconsin. Kind of cheap, but sounded good, and I've been going through quite a lot of this lately. It went really well with the ribs I made this past weekend.
Ballast Point does a lot of good stuff. They do the Sculpin, the Grapefruit Sculpin, a couple of other things. And while the Grapefruit Sculpin's a little bit too sweet for me, I am rolling out for the very first time, they stocked it at my liquor store, the Habanero Sculpin. And it's got some bite to it. I like spicy food. And usually, because I also like bitter beers, when people say, "Oh, this one's hot," it's like maybe you can taste a little trace of it. This one's got kick. I mean, it's almost on the edge for me of being too much. So if you like something that's a little hotter, gets a little different flavor, the Habanero Sculpin from Ballast Point. We'll see how this goes tonight. Even though it's cold, I may start sweating here as I drink it in Command Central this evening. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something delicious and you're ready to dig in to this episode of TryHards. Guys, we got to get it started by talking about what's been going on with the Patreon. We picked up 5 new patrons since last week's show. I got to start out by saying thank you so much to Chris Beeston, a new Heart of the Hearts. Chris pledged $10 a month. Now, there's a little bit of a backstory here. I know Chris. Chris is the father of 2 other Magic players at our LGS, Aaron and Devin. And Chris and I are about the same age. When we travel to events, we always seem to, we don't travel together very often, but we always find each other at events. And it's that sort of older guy, slow burn that we go through the day together. And Chris was good enough after listening to the cast last week. He had picked it up, and he signed up to be a Heart of the Heart right out of the gate. Chris, thank you so much. Tryharders include Chris Anderson, who has just come on board. Thank you, Chris. Grant Owen. And something that is spelled U-R-D-R-N-K-P-I-L-O-T. Now, this may be someone who's trying to hide their identity from us, so I won't out them. But if you separate some of those and think about it in sort of license plate speak, I think that spells out "You're Drunk Pilot." So I'll do a little research and see if that's who I think it might be. Congratulations and thank you, your drunk pilot, for jumping on as a try-harderer. And Michael Warren jumped in as a try-hard supporter. Michael, thank you so very much. Guys, we are now right on the edge of the $100 a month goal. So this is the way things are going to work. This is our first cast in April, and we really just set the Patreon page up a couple of weeks ago. March was kind of like that little half month to let us get it going. And by the way, before we get into this, Matt, did you do your homework? I sent Brian my bio for the Patreon site today before the show. Have you sent yours in?
I may have pulled a Brian Tibbetts and didn't do that because I totally forgot.
Well, we'll let Matt see if he can submit that after the show. Hopefully it'll be up before you get this. But we've got so much going on at the Patreon page. Patreon.com/tryhards. Just search for tryhards on Patreon and you'll find us. Guys, we're going to have a raffle this month. We're going to have some Google Hangout time. If you are a $10 a month or higher supporter, we'll be getting in touch with you about that. And because we have two Hard of Famers, we're going to have to jump on Magic Online and probably get beat up along the way. So if you need some more tryhards in your life, you can get a little bit more from us in addition to the cast, which will always be free. The casts themselves will never be paywalled in any way. But if you want some more, please check us out. We like to have a lot of fun. Boy, if we just pick up another $9 a month, we're going to be doing two raffles a month. So there's lots of stuff to get out there. And we're already filling up the raffle box I posted the picture of on the Patreon page earlier this week. So Chris, Grant, Yur, and Michael, thank you so much for jumping on as patrons this week with the tryhards. Guys, we were actually deluged by thank yous and congratulations and, hey, this isn't 100% crappy. After we were featured on the Mothership in the Community Spotlight last week, that was very, very cool. But it led me to this moment. You know when you have a relationship with someone that's close enough that you can kind of tell them to off? Yeah, I had to do that with a couple of people this week. They had known we were doing the cast, but, and these are people in our circle of Magic friends, they'd never bothered to listen. And so they finally listened when they saw it on the Mothership, and a couple of them said to me, you know, that's not terrible. Like, I didn't expect much. I didn't expect much from you guys. And that's when I looked at him and went, hey, you, man. We've been doing this for almost a year now. So if you haven't checked us out leading up to that, or you're back for the first time since we were featured in that Community Spotlight, welcome to Tryhards. We're so glad you're here. Guys, what MTG did you play this week? Brian, did you get out and follow up your midweek Modern last week?
Oh, man, I had the bag right at the door, ready to go. Wouldn't you know it, girls started throwing up in the house. And it was just one of those, take a deep breath and sigh and say, okay, I guess I'm not playing Magic tonight. And they all look at me and they're like, oh, we're sorry, Daddy. As another round of vomit comes up. So, yeah, Dad played Nursemaid instead of playing Magic this week. So I was able to run down for a wee moment to finish off some trades that I had scheduled to do on that Wednesday night and talk to some of the guys. And, of course, everybody is wanting this, that, and everything else that I own. And I'm kind of like, just leave me alone, people. But it was really nice to get the feedback from everybody seeing the article on the Mothership. So I kind of felt like I was the celebrity making my little, you know, 10-second appearance and waving to the crowd and then skipping out just like a good celeb should.
Brian, you haven't taught the girls the drinking rhyme yet? Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. I mean, are they still getting it mixed up?
Oh, God. Well, as hard as Willa is to go down at night, I am just a little tempted to, you know, slip a bit of scotch into her nightly milk or ginger ale or whatever she's happened to have at the dinner table and be like, yeah, just drink it all down. Just, yep, those eyes are getting sleepy, honey. That's okay. Because, geez, that's tough. But, haven't had to resort to that yet. So please don't call Child and Family Services on me, thankfully. The girls know a lot. Thankfully, Sean, they're not alcoholics yet. That's going to come in time, I'm sure. Just like the beer sitting in front of me or, you know, keeping Daddy going. I'm sure they'll find their fair share when they get older as well.
Brian's also a bit of a brewer when it comes to homebrew beer. So we'll see if he names his next one after his daughters or after some of his favorite Magic cards. I know it'll be neck and neck and somebody's going to be offended no matter what he picks. So we'll see exactly how it goes. Hurley, what Magic did you play this week?
I played Domestic Hurley Friday night. Played a couple of Modern Masters drafts, actually three of them this week. I think the blue-black archetype, like you start with Dimir because The Denrova Horror is just a bomb. Like, it's a bomb common in this set. And if you can go into Grixis, is really powerful because it opens up a lot of removal in there. But I had a really nice low to the ground Jund Sacrifice Outlet deck. 4 Vampire Aristocrats, 3 Beetles, I think it was, and then some Token Makers and 2 of the Sprouting Thrynaxes. I would have actually won 3-0 with that one by Tam down my last game. It was so much clicking from having to sacrifice stuff, and there was a lot of freaking math to do with that sacrifice deck. So it's got a lot of good practice. I'll probably draft Modern Masters and Paper one more time before Amonkhet drops.
It was a good week of Magic for all of us. I hit up the LGS. It was just standard for F&M. I was there for a different reason than just to win at Magic. I've got a bit of a change coming up with the career path and what I'm going to be doing, and it's going to take me away from my weekends, at least at the outset. And so I felt like an athlete who was transitioning from being a full-time player to somebody who's just going to be kind of sparingly used here and there. And I was really concentrated more on talking with everybody who was there, taking in the ambiance at the shop, sort of enjoying all those aspects of it. Also, I had a little bit more of a chance to bring along my Padawan, Rachel, in her lessons. She's gotten the actual rules of the game now, and we've progressed to strategy talk, sort of the beginnings of the ideas of card advantage, sequencing, things along that line. And so I gave her some homework this week, guys. I sent her a link for an article with many consider it the seminal article of Magic Theory, Who's the Beatdown? So she's got that to read, and then we're going to talk about that and role assignment and how it's so very important to correctly identify the role that you're in at that moment of the game so that you can then play it out in a way that is advantageous to you. So getting into that sort of strategy end of it now with the Padawan. She actually agreed to also do an email Q&A series about learning to play and starting to play. So we're going to get that going, and then that's going to be posted on the Patreon page as well, patreon.com/tryhard. So if you're getting someone into the game, you can maybe use that as a reference point. I know that there have been a number of responses to the poll that we have up at Patreon as well about how many people have you taught to play and so forth. That'll be up until next week's show, and then we'll have a new poll for you up at the Patreon page, patreon.com/tryhards. Guys, just one big tournament over the weekend. That was GP San Antonio Team Modern. That was a unified deck build. That means if you have Lightning Bolt in your deck, Matt, Brian and I can't have it in ours. 556 teams descended on San Antonio, and it was a bit of an upset in the finals, if you ask me. The team of Orange, Jansen, and Prost knocked off the Peach Garden Oath. Reed Duke, Owen Turtenwald, and Huey Jensen. Orange, Jansen, and Prost were on Blue-White Control, Jund, and Affinity. Duke was on Abzan Death Shadow. We now have every flavor of Death Shadow. It's official. Turtenwald was on Grixis Control, and Jensen was on Eldrazi Tron. Looked like good matchups for Duke, Turtenwald, and Jensen just when you played it out. But in the end, Orange, Jansen, and Prost found a way to get there, even through Duke's turn 2 Stony Silence against Affinity in the decisive game in the match. Affinity was able to come back and win through that. So, guys, this was a lot of fun to catch here and there over the weekend. And while some people don't like the unified portion of this when it comes to deck construction, a lot of creative types will tell you, and this is something that Maru hits on a lot in his Making Magic articles, which is restriction breeds creativity. Brian, did you enjoy seeing this innovation, or did you want to just see the top tier decks kind of mash it up so we got more data points?
No, we absolutely need more tournaments like this. I think with the success and the number of teams who showed up, especially the number of players, 1,600 plus players, the innovation is what drives this game. People say Modern, you can play almost anything, and this kind of tournament proves it. There were so many good deck lists running around. We even got to see new deck lists by Pascal Maynard, the Kark Clan Ironworks combo. That thing was sweet. I loved seeing what people did for like the A slot, the B slot, and the C slot to try to get, you know, matchups across the board. It looked like so much fun because it was like a kid at a candy store. Every time that they would shift to a new match, I would immediately scan the players and find out what everybody was playing. And I just wanted to see all the matches at once. And I would love it if they had like a camera. I was trying to envision this in my mind, have like a little frame and have a camera like traveling over the field kind of back and forth hitting highlights of each of the matches as it goes. And I'm like, God, what am I doing? I just have to kind of concentrate on this match. But I was always curious to see what was happening in the other matches. The little score in the corner was really cool, I thought. It was a lot of fun to watch. I think not having just the top-tier decks versus top-tier decks and people changing up Death Shadow to get the other flavors, like you said, Abzan, Jund, whatever it was, that was really cool. We got the blue-white control from Orange and the winning team, which everybody's kind of talking about right now, plus the new, you know, decks coming in that we hadn't even seen before. So, Hurley, what did you think? Did you get a chance to watch this over the weekend? I tried to catch it as much as I could.
You're right, Sean. It absolutely breeds some innovation. I mean, you know, Lightning Bolt being stretched thin is a big deal. Path of Exile being stretched thin is a big deal. You get a idea that these decks that are these core archetypes are still the best deck. There's really not a lot of, I guess, changes to these main decks. So, I mean, we still see Death Shadows. The big one we saw was Karklan Ironworks. That's been played online for a little bit. And in fact, I can't remember his name, but it's a Darkest Mage. And he thinks that it's one of the better decks, but people just haven't taken the time to tune it. The other one that popped up was Bant Nightfall. Did you guys get to see that one played?
I did. The Bant Nightfall deck was really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really cool deck. It's got some interesting deck choices in there. It's kind of weird to see a format where green is so powerful in the formats, and that's exactly what this is right here. I think his Tireless Trackers were like 21, 22s or something like, you know, 24, 23s. I don't even remember what they were. I understand shifting the Death Shadows decks so you can make the best use of your cards. The one that's kind of gained some innovation now is Esper Death Shadow, which I didn't see any pop up. I think there was one at like 20th place. The Esper is really cool in it. You know, it's all built around Orzhov Charm too. I do want to touch on something. I want your guys' feedback on this. Something that happened during it caused a little bit of a kerfuffle. Sam Black, who, you know, we all know is a very accomplished Magic player, twice he actually played an additional land. Didn't realize it because, you know, he was playing Explorers because he was playing Amulet Bloom. The first time he got game rules violation on the first day, on day one, and then on day two, early in day two, he was playing. They didn't catch it. Of course, the chat caught it almost immediately. You know, and chat's like, cheater, Black. You know how people are generally. They didn't catch it until the next player's turn. So they ruled that it went too far forward and he had played an additional bounce land. And because the additional bounce land, I think he got to play the, is it Azusa they play? I don't remember the one that you can play two additional lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He knew the player, but he said, okay, I'm conceding this game to you because he was just going to get a GRV for the day. And since he hadn't had any that day, you know, he was going to be fine. But he said, you know, this is going to put me too far ahead. I'm going to concede. I think that just shows his character realized, hey, I screwed up. I don't want this unfair advantage. I don't want to win because of this unfair advantage. And that's exactly what was going to happen. That put him so far ahead, it wasn't even funny. So, you know, if you see people saying, oh, he cheated during that, well, you know what? No, he made a mistake, and then he owned up to his mistake. And, in fact, he put on Twitter, I made a mistake, played an additional land, and I think it was Matt Costa he was playing. But he said, I gave my opponent the win because I did make that mistake, and I don't feel like it was the punishment was fitting for what the mistake I made. So I think that just, you know, says, hey, look, if I screw up, you know, it's not I got away with it. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
That was the absolute best thing he could have done at the moment, which is tough when you're on that stage. You know, you could kind of leave it up to the judges to figure out, you know, what to do, give you another GRV. And then there would always been that cloud hanging over, like you said, of public opinion saying he's a cheater. He did this yesterday. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's taking advantage, et cetera, et cetera. Taking all of that out of the equation and just conceding the game is the best response. And that's a lesson to people. We don't, you know, people of Sam Black's character who play this game of Magic don't want to win by doing that. We have plenty of examples of people who have won by cheating in the past, and Wizards and DCI thankfully have dealt with them harshly and effectively. Sam's not one of those people. This is a great, great example of what to do when you're at a tournament like that. It's not about winning. You got to keep the integrity of the game first and foremost. And I think us as ambassadors, as we always say, I don't think this would be something that I would put above any of us to do. This would be something I would kind of expect for my teammates to do if we were in the same situation. Sean, you agree with that, or you think the competitive edge might get the better of you?
No, I agree with that 100%. I was actually very happy in a way that chat and social media jumped on this and were ready to chastise him. Not because Sam should have paid the price for making a mistake, which he owned up to, but to me, I was glad to see the environment that we're in now as compared to an era of Magic 18, 20 years ago, which was all about angle shooting, which was all about trying to scumbag your opponents. It was all about trying to get those little edges. It was the old SEC NASCAR motto, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And I'm so glad that we're in such a different place now as a game, as a community, that we can cut Sam a break because he owned up to it. Had he not, then it would have been fair game. He absolutely did the right thing, but I'm glad the community mindset is that we're willing to go after people who cheat the game as opposed to saying, well, they just did what they needed to win. That's the wrong mindset. Did it play out a little harshly at first? Yeah, but that's really kind of the little bit of the mob mentality that's the downside for some social media outlets. But I was just glad to see where we are as a game. And Sam, he owned up to it. He said he made the mistake. He conceded the game. You're right, Brian. That was the best possible outcome. So overall, when you step back and take a look at this, I was very happy with how the whole thing played out.
My first inclination would not to be concede. After that happened, would not to be to concede. Now, if we're playing a team tournament, you guys said, you know, that's a really unfair advantage. I would say, oh, you guys are right. I would concede. But my first inclination, I would be so angry at myself because mentally I'm kind of self-deprecating there where I'll say, you know what, you screwed up don't make that mistake again. I probably wouldn't even cross my mind to concede. Now that Sam has done that and he set a precedent for it, it's absolutely going to be something that crosses my mind.
Well, congratulations, Matt. We're glad that you came to that conclusion because of the three of us, when we're playing in a team event, you would be the one to play the extra land. So you're going to be the one that has to make that decision anyway.
I would be. You're right.
You know what? You know what else has me really worried, guys? Did you see the power level of some of these teams? We're going to play in the team event coming up in Louisville in May. I'm a little bit worried that we're taking a nail file to a gunfight.
Oh, you are not kidding, because the level and the speed with which some of these guys play, especially if it gets down to one of those matches where they've played each other before in whatever qualifier, whatever pro tour event, whatever you name it, they've seen it before. It's a little bit like, oh geez, that looks pretty rough. So yeah, I kind of am with you, Sean. At the same time, the whole idea of a team event is very, very attractive. And I think, you know, think of how many teams there were kind of like us, who just wanted to go for the experience and to maybe sit down across the table with those guys and see if they could pull, you know, a Matt Damon in Rounders and, you know, take that guy on, take the Johnny Cho on right head to head and just beat him.
You know where you find all the teams like us? They were in the 0 to 9 point section after day one was over. That's where you found those teams.
Hey, Mardu Togens is going to do some damage, darn it.
I think it will, you know, actually. We're not ready to reveal our tech yet, so we don't want to go too far with that. But if you enjoyed the team atmosphere, this weekend's GP Mexico City is team limited. 3 players, 12 packs total, and you have to produce at least 3 40-card decks out of that 12 pack. So it should be interesting in Mexico City this weekend. That's all the tournament news from the weekend, but plenty of other news to get to on Tryhards this week. Guys, we're starting to get official Amonkhet spoilers. But before we get into some of the cards that are interesting and what we like, we got the Matt Tabak official rules mechanic article this week. So let's go over these, some of them in depth, some of them not so much. We covered a few last week on the show. We now know the 5 mechanics that will be in Amonkhet. Cycling, Embalm, that's the uncounterable activation from the graveyard, Exert, do it harder when you attack, Aftermath, those are the twisted split cards, and one that I thought we wouldn't see again just because of the way Wizards has taken the game, but -1/-1 counters are an official mechanic in Amonkhet. Brian, do any of these stand out to you other than the fact that they brought back one of the sort of old man favorites from the past in cycling as interesting rules-wise or hard to grok? I mean, I don't see anything here that's on the difficulty to understand level of, say, vehicles for new players.
No, the exert mechanic, I think, is actually helpful to new players because it's one of those reminders of having your creatures tapped down is a big deal. You better make sure that what you want to exert is going to pay off for you later so you're not just kind of sitting there with a naked board. I'm very, very curious about the split cards. Dust to Dawn, Destined to Lead are the ones that have been spoiled so far. I do think that the minus one counters as an actual mechanic is quite fascinating to me. It's not just an effect. I don't know about that. That seems something like, is this going to be an evergreen mechanic? Is it going to be something that they can go back to the well on a few times? Because I never thought of this as a mechanic. Did you guys?
No, but I think he's just mentioning it in this article because it plays such an important part. Part of it in this little blurb he has there that he says, because Amonkhet has minus one and minus one counters, you won't see any cards in the set feature plus one counters. I think it's meant to play pretty well with some of the like fabricate mechanics that are out there. And I think it's going to add an interesting thing. But yeah, you're right. I never thought of it as kind of like an evergreen mechanic. Maybe they'll give it a name. I don't know. Reverse fabricate, something like that. But they...
It could be like Sword of Wither.
Yeah.
Sort of. We'll just make it the
Sort of Wither. So, no, as I look at these mechanics, there are two to me that stick out as likely to be evergreen, and that's exert and cycling. Because I find them very easy to understand, and they're very helpful and intuitive to gameplay. So if I had to pick a couple, I think exert and cycling would make for good evergreen mechanics.
I agree. I think exert's a sweet, really sweet mechanic, and there's a lot of design space there.
The embalm mechanic, I find very, very, as a flavor idea and design idea for this set, to be probably the most closely aligned. Exert, I still think, is, Sean, what you said, the best option for an evergreen mechanic. It's very straightforward. And the effects so far seem to be really, really good and really, really strong.
Now that we understand the mechanics that are going to be in the set, let's take a look at some of the spoilers. What stands out to you guys? I know the first thing that caught my eye and had piqued my curiosity was how they were going to do gods this time around. Because the set really sets up four gods as figureheads of each of the colors' mythos on Amonkhet, and we know how they treated gods last time we saw them in Theros block, and it looks like they're going to be closer to these sort of indomitable creatures as opposed to enchantments we saw last time around. We have Hazoret the Fervent, 3 generic mana and a red. Yeah, I almost said colorless there. I'm old. What can I say? Legendary creature god, indestructible, haste. He's a 5/4. Or maybe she's a 5/4. I can't tell from the low-res card art here. For a 2 and a red, you get to discard a card, and Hazoret deals 2 damage to each opponent, and that gets you to the quote-unquote drawback on this card that gets you a 5/4 indestructible haste for 4, and that's that Hazoret can't attack or block unless you have 1 or fewer cards in hand. Hurley, is it time to spec on maybe some 1 with nothings?
Some 1 with nothings. I like that this god is kind of tying into a bigger theme with the whole block, or I shouldn't say the block, just the set, because of like the cycling, and there's some, you know, cycling matter cards that came out. I think this card would be really powerful for a kind of a really hyper aggressive, this is your top end, you know, 4-drop type of thing. I think this card's really powerful. It's just, we got to see how it's going to work. Again, the 4 toughness makes it really difficult because guess what? It can't attack into an open Heart of Kieran. So again, I mean, I'm like, do I really want to mess with that? You know, my 4-drop versus their 2-drop type of thing.
Matt, I'm going to correct you right there. I'd be more than happy to attack into a Heart of Kieran because Hezeret's indestructible.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sorry. So that's my script. See, I can't read. I don't know why you guys are letting me on your team because I can't even read the card.
Well, my concern was going to be maybe this is one of the cards that's held back until rotation because Grasp of Darkness is still in the format and -4/-4 will kill an indestructible 4-butt, Brian.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of things people have to play around, what kind of removal is going to suddenly be good. Fatal Push, I can't imagine, is going to be bad. Yet with this card and cards like this, because I'm guessing all the gods are going to have indestructible, they could make them a lot less powerful. And so that'll be very, very interesting. I really like the flavor on this card. I think it's really good. It's aggressively costed. The mechanic that comes after the indestructible, I think, is what's going to delineate each of the gods. You know, I'm guessing white's going to have vigilance, blue's going to have flying, black's going to have death touch, green's going to have trample or something of that nature. You know, that's going to be really fun to kind of, you know, just kind of solidify it into those color metas, what we're really used to seeing from each of those colors. But so far, so good. I think this is a great flavor card.
Brian, anything else catching your eye besides Destined to Lead?
The one card that I'm really curious about to see how it goes is this Trial of Knowledge card, the enchantment, mm-hmm. one blue and three other. When Trial of Knowledge enters the battlefield, draw three cards, then discard a card. And when a cartouche enters the battlefield under your control, return Trial of Knowledge to its owner's hand. To me, this kind of seems like a control type card where you can maybe start cycling it with some cartouches. The one cartouche that's been spoiled is in white, which is a natural foil to blue, obviously, in a control deck. And it's only a one cost, Cartouche of Solidarity. That'll be interesting to see if that becomes kind of the next level of a Glimmer of Genius type thing, or you're drawing three and only discarding one. Curious to see how it works in a limited format, but definitely how it works in a constructed format.
Yeah, cartouche isn't going to be a new card type, so don't worry about that. These look like they're going to play out as enchantments, enchantment auras along that line. It'll be interesting to see what built-in card synergy we can find as we get into Amonkhet. Matt, anything catching your eye?
The Nest of Scarabs is interesting to me. Too generic and a black enchantment that's whenever you put one or more -1/-1 counters on a creature, create that many 1/1 black insect creature tokens. How is that going to interact? I mean, is there going to be that many -1/-1 counters running around? Are we going to get Black Sun Zenith back? I mean, I hope so. Let me say that. I really hope so. Wouldn't it be nice to have all the Zeniths in standard?
Yeah, that'd be
but
cool.
I'm keeping my eye on that one because I also think that that could have some constructive playability in kind of the Eternal formats if you can figure out combos, and that absolutely will have constructive playability in EDH too. The other one that's really cool, and this is my, I guess my Timmy at heart here, is the Anoketra's Name. One white and one generic, instant, zombies you control get +2/+1 until end of turn. Other creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Now, obviously, this is a play towards the embalm mechanic because everything that comes back from embalm is a zombie, and they're white zombies from what I've seen. The Anoketra's Name, I mean, if we get kind of a zombie sub theme, maybe we can start seeing like an Esper zombie deck running around in standard. It's just +2/+1 for zombies is really, really powerful, it seems like to me. And then I really like those the cycling lanes. We haven't talked about those at all. What's your guys' thoughts on those? I'm sure everyone here has seen what the cycling lanes are.
No, I think they're going to be great.
Yeah, they're going to be great. Just mana fixing and the fact that they're fetchable in formats like Modern and Legacy and in, you know, Eternal formats is going to be even a bonus. I think definitely think they've got a place to play in Standard.
You know, I could see them actually in Legacy. The red-green one in lands, because you can, you know, freely cycle that for two colorless, so you don't have to worry about cycle Tranquil Thicket for one green. Essentially, a fetchable land. So I could really see that being played. Prowling Serpipard. I thought this was a freaking joke. It can't be countered. It's a 4/3, and creature spells you control can't be countered. I mean, how much do they hate freaking control at this point?
Hey, Matt.
Hey, what?
That's a weird looking cat.
I know.
That's exactly what I thought.
That's why I brought it up.
Oh, it's a rabbit.
Don't worry, the blue one will be a rabbit snake.
I was wondering if the Nest of Scarabs is what the Archfiend of Ifnir keeps for his odd-looking cat, so to speak. Because the Archfiend, when you cycle, hands out -1/-1 counters to each creature your opponent controls. That gives you multiple black insect creatures each time you cycle if you've got Nest of Scarabs out. So maybe this is going to be like an untargeted sort of black board control situation that we see going forward. And if you could, you're right, Matt, augment that with Black Sun Zenith, that could be a new heyday for black control.
I'm really excited about the whole kind of zombie sub theme in there. And then the last one we have to mention, I mean, without a doubt, we have to mention it, is Avon Mind Censor. What do you guys think about that bad boy in Standard?
I love it.
Oh, I do too. I do too. It makes a lot of the search ideas a little bit tougher. Obviously, Traverse the Uvenwald, boy, that's just going to ruin somebody's day if Aven Mind Sensor comes down while you're trying to resolve that spell. Attune with Aether, that's going to be kind of blanked by Aven Mind Sensor. Obviously, Aven Mind Sensor is a 3 casting cost. You can get in under there with Traverse and some other things, but it's going to definitely have an effect, I think, if nothing else out of the sideboard. We've seen how powerful Aven Mind Sensor can be in builds of Death and Taxes and Legacy and in Abzan builds in Modern. So, yeah, it's definitely going to make its presence felt in Standard. And a 2-1 flyer flash is pretty good for 3 anyway. Just with its added ability, I think, is even just icing on the cake.
Those are some of the preview cards from Amonkhet. But before we move on, guys, I left myself a further note about this, but it's in some kind of, I don't know, geoglyphic, Sanskrit, that I can't even read what I wrote down right here. The art I did next to it is super sweet, but I can't even read what I wrote down there. Oh, I finally looked.
I was waiting for this.
It says invocation. That's what it took me a while to figure that out. Oh, I can guess I can just scratch that off my list. You can tell from the tone of my voice where I fall on this. I think the cards that they picked were home runs. I think the art that was commissioned and turned in by the artist, fantastic. Wrath of God looks absolutely brilliant. You look at some of these other artworks, they actually deserve better than the frame that they were put in for these invocations. I understand that design and creative wanted something that felt this way, but after the first one was released, it took Proxy Guy 6 seconds to make a frame that looked better. I think we're at the point now that Wizards is going to have to start outsourcing to the community or to other creative types some of this work, because what they turned out, Brian, for the look of these invocations, to me, is the new low watermark on the expedition-style cards in each set.
Yes, I would agree with you there, and I definitely don't think that these are going to be nearly as popular as the expeditions and masterpieces that we've seen so far. However, I have softened my stance just a bit, and here's why. Because when I first saw these online, I was blown away by the artwork, Sean, which I mentioned to you earlier, and you've just mentioned already. I think the artwork is some of the best that we've seen. I was a little underwhelmed by the masterpiece artwork in the Aether Revolt and Kaladesh. I just thought some of those just seemed a little too trinkety, a little too cheesy kind of thing, too much going on. These have real power. They've got shadow. They've got light. They've got a sense of space that you just don't see on Magic cards on this level before. The card frames, of course, I'm not a fan of, but having seen them kind of online, they do look a little bit better on camera, and so I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to look better even yet in person. But what's going to really, really disappoint me, I think, is seeing some of this fantastic artwork in this card frame if I do happen to crack one, because it's still not going to be the same. It's just not going to be enjoying this artwork in this card frame, like you've said. It's just not. And so I do think it's a mistake right now. I still want to get some explanation from Wizards is readability. Readability on cards is a big thing. And I know Jaden Komplarins and some others have come out and said, hey, these aren't for new players. These are things for established players. They already know what the card text says. I get that. But if you're a new player, you're as likely to open one of these as anybody, old guys like us who've been playing for forever. And what are you going to do with this? You know, you're going to open a Force of Will and be like, oh, I don't even know what that card says. It's like, first of all, you can't play with it. And B, let me read it to you, and you know, you're just going to kind of have to suss it out that way. I just wish they would have gone a little bit more distinct on the lettering instead of trying to hide it within the hieroglyphics. I took a semester of Sanskrit when I was in my college days, and I remember the headaches I used to get after reading that for a couple hours on end. This kind of reminds me of those right now.
Matt, I know you've been thinking about these for a while.
Oh my gosh, I think these are the biggest turds they've put out in a long time, and I'm not even going to soften my blow on that one. It's an embarrassment that they put these out. The readability on it just blows my mind. I mean, somebody took all the card text out and left the names in, and then with no art and said, what are the names of these cards? And they had 12 of them on there. And I'm not joking when I say it took me a good 5 minutes to figure out what the names of the cards were. That's crazy. Days looks like Bays. The God, what is his name? The Fervent? Is that what that is? Yeah, mm-hmm. Hazoret the Fervent. Somebody posted on there and I can't unsee it, but if you look at the masterpiece for him, it looks just like Hazoret the Pervert. And I'm not making that up. I mean,
I thought it said that when I first saw the card frame, and I'm like, they really named somebody Hazoret the Pervert? And
then yeah, I was like, wait,
that's the Fervent. Sorry.
That's not okay.
Hurley, let me interrupt you for a second. What do you think of the power and toughness not being to the left and the right of each other, but on the top and bottom?
I like that they didn't go full on, you know, like Future Sight, where, you know, they completely changed all that up. Stacking the power and toughness there was kind of cool. It's a little bit jarring to look at it, and I could see it, if you just glance at it, being very confusing. But that's part of the issue with this, too, is that if you just glance at these cards, you're not going to be able to identify them. You're going to misread them. I think it adds an interesting, kind of fits the theme of the frame, but if they could have just blown out that frame a little bit, they could have kept it like that and it looked really cool and then put the hieroglyphics down the side.
If you're a green mage, do you feel a little butthurt that you didn't get any of these revealed to you at this stage? I mean, none of the cards that are not standard legal are in green right now. And that just seems to be kind of a slap in the face. Obviously, we're going to get the God as a masterpiece since they've already kind of set that up. But what do you think about that? Wizards just ignoring that going forward?
I don't think all of them have been released yet as we record this. So we could see some more.
Well, I hope so, because I feel like balance among the colors is obviously very, very important for Wizards to do, because as much as we hate to say it, blue mages always tend to get the spoils and to see Pact of Negation and Daze and Spell Pierce and Cryptic Command and Stifle and Force of Will again. It just seems kind of like an embarrassment of riches. Well, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Let's be honest. They wanted to reprint some of the best spells in history, so 60% of them are going to be blue. I mean, we just have to be honest with ourselves there. And when it comes to balance, Brian, you're not worried about that as long as you get your counterbalance. So we know that you've already been proven. Disappointment seems to be the tenor of the day so far. And Maru, ever the glutton for more punishment, has asked for feedback. If you get the chance, go ahead and give him your opinions on this, because it will influence some of their design decisions and so forth going forward. With Amonkhet just a few weeks away for pre-release, well, what are you going to get if you win that? What if you come in second or third or sixth? Well, Brian's been thinking a little bit about how rewards are doled out at his LGS. Brian, what is this topic of conversation taken on as a life of its own?
There seems to be some, let's say, debate. Some of it not so friendly, unfortunately, about the nature of prize payouts at the LGS. This past Saturday, the shop hosted a Chaos Draft, which has been eminently popular since they were instituted. I know Trademart up in the Quad Cities does these, and Ben at the shop has instituted them as well. It's not a big entry fee, and Ben's big on like buy a pack kind of things. And so prize payouts for winning a Chaos Draft have technically been maybe kind of a magic promo card from some, you know, thing back in the past that he's held on to extras of or something like that. But not, you know, payouts in packs and store credit and things of that nature. And so there was a gentleman from the LGS who posted kind of a rant. Feels like he's getting cheated. Feels like the shop's keeping all of the profits, not paying out to the players. As I kind of followed pretty incredulously the entire comment thread, it kind of dawned on me that there's a lot of people out there who go down to the shop and kind of expect prize payouts to be at a certain level. Not everybody. And some people had some very reasoned arguments against this. Magic is a game. We're there for the community, et cetera. And of course, yes, when you win, you want to, you know, reap some rewards for your effort and your time. But overall, it was a very, very long 120 comment plus thread that had all kinds of different emotional swings back and forth. And so, guys, I guess it just brought up this idea of how important are prize payouts to you when you go to the LGS, and how much do you look ahead of time as to what the prize payouts are before you sign up for a tournament?
Let me start with the last question first, Brian. If I'm going to my LGS, I have never actually checked what the prize payout is before I've decided to go to an event. Here's my total decision-making process. does it fit in my schedule? What format is it? Do I feel like playing that format at the time? And do I feel like whopping out that extra money if it's a special event? The answer to the last one is usually, sure, absolutely, let's play some Magic. And unless I'm getting particularly tired of a format, again, absolutely, let's play some Magic. It never really occurs to me that at the LGS level, I'm searching for these potentially high EV things. I'm going because Magic is my hobby. It's something I enjoy doing. And for the most part, 90% of the people that I see at the LGS for these things are enjoyable people to be around. So I'm looking at it like you would, say, go to a movie. It's my distraction, my involvement, my fun outlet for that opportunity. Now, do I look at potential EV if I'm going to travel, say, 2.5 hours to go to an IQ or something like that? Yeah, I'm a little bit more discerning if I'm going to put that amount of time into it. But as far as the LGS level, I don't think I've ever asked what the payout is before I've gotten into any local event.
Matt, what about you? You ever kind of click around on the event and or ever even had, God forbid this happened, where you're expecting one set of prize payouts and then it changes after you get to the shop?
Both those happen all the time. Now, I think I'm a little bit different audience now that I'm down here because there's one, another one just opened up. So I want to say there's 6 shops locally. So I have quite a bit of choice there. Part of that choice allows me to kind of click around, and I do that all the time where I'll click around and I'll figure out what's the best prize payout for special events. You know, if I'm just saying F&M, you know, Joe Blow F&M, whatever, I could care less about that. You know, the shop I go to always offers fairly good prize payouts. Anything above just your normal F&M level, I absolutely check. If there's PPTQs going on, usually whenever there's PPTQs, there's 2 or 3 in the area that are maybe all 20, 30, 40 minutes away. And I look at the prize payout there. You know, Modern Masters drafts. There was people down here trying to run $50 Modern, and I'm not making that up, $50 Modern Masters drafts, and they were putting 2 packs in for the prize pool. So they say, well, you know, that's retail price. Well, yeah, it is, but why would I go there when I can literally go for a $35 Modern Masters draft and get one prize, you know, get one prize pack in there? Big stuff like that, I look at it all the time. I have ran, in fact, I went to a PPTQ. It was about an hour away. I got up there and they had canceled it. Didn't even post anything about it. I mean, that really pissed me off because, you know, I drove 45 minutes away. Different shop, different time. I happened to be about an hour away. I just happened to be there and I saw they were doing a tournament. I ran down there to grab something that I'd gotten off of, I think it was off Craigslist or whatever the local place was. So I said, you know what, screw it. I've got the rest of the day. I'm just kind of playing around. I went in there and, you know, they had said, oh, we're guaranteeing, I think it was guaranteed $500 on this legacy tournament. Well, they had like 7 people show up. And so I'm like, okay. And they said, well, no, you know what? We're going to do, instead of $500, we're just going to do $100 or something like that. You know, I understand what, from their standpoint, what, how that was. I didn't end up playing because I'm like, well, you know what? It's not even worth my time. Cause if I take first, I pay $20 and I get $40. Like I'm not going to sit here and slog through it. And then you'll cut to play 6 rounds. So I don't know. Maybe I'm the minority. Maybe I'm just in a different market where, you know, there is a competition down here. But overall, I do look at it.
I think essentially what Matt's driving at is he's in a market that has competition. And competition should drive right. Those things. And I realize I probably have Stockholm Syndrome because I've been in Quincy for 12 years. And we've only ever had one place to play that really offers any kind of competitive level at all. So I may be sort of treating it with kid gloves. Would I like to see a little bit more? Sure, but it's also a business, and I'd rather have somewhere to play and get slightly less on the payback than have nowhere to play.
With a lack of competition, I understand that there's the LGS owner could just kind of start lording over the community and just dictating whatever he or she is going to say and just say, tough, I'm the only game in town, get used to it. People will stop playing there if they don't find it to be a good environment. And in my experience, there are just a handful out of the hundreds and thousands of LGS owners in the country who run that business model. Most of them are in it to serve the players, and that's key. They want people in their shop because they're not going to make a ton of money on the entry fees for these tournaments. They're going to make the monies on selling deck sleeves, selling singles, selling dice, you know, selling snacks and water and everything else. That's why they want people in their shop.
Well, Brian, it's the convenience store model. There's almost no profit margin on gasoline, but they want you to buy a soda and a candy bar while you're there.
Oh, totally. And I get that. And that's why I try to buy all of that stuff when I'm at the LGS. There's no reason to order that stuff online because I can just go down and get it. And I'm helping out small business, and it's just a lot more convenient. Yeah, it might cost me a little bit more in tax, but so what? That's kind of what makes us good consumers and good ambassadors for everybody involved. Both of you had fantastic comments about this. I was a little taken aback because I think I'm like Sean Harley. I have never checked on this as a determining factor, whether I attend an event or not. Sometimes I guess I look to see, oh, that's interesting. That's what the prize payout is. But it's more of like, oh, do you get an STG point? Do you get, you know, a pro point if it's a qualifier or something like that, as opposed to the prize payout? That to me is just kind of set. It is what it is. Those decisions are above there. And so I didn't think to question. I'm not saying that we shouldn't question, however, and if we have a real beef with a store owner, take it up with them, see if they can come to, you know, some kind of a compromise, if they really feel like they're getting screwed on their price support. And I'm sure the LGS would be amenable to making those changes. So please weigh in. That's a fascinating topic that I guess had never crossed my mind until I realized just how popular it was in my area.
Yeah, if you're going to weigh in on this in your community, do it respectfully, do it with an open mind, and do it in a way that's going to encourage some dialogue, not from an emotional, tempestuous point of view that really isn't going to lead it anywhere. You want to get in touch with us? All the contact info is in the show notes. Guys, before we get into the end of show drum roll, there's one more big thing that happened just as we were sitting down to get ready to do the podcast. Through various pretty official channels, we've now learned that later this week, Wizards, and it may have already happened by the time this cast comes out, Wizards is going to announce a functional change on split cards. Word is that they will no longer be considered individual when they're in any zone except on the stack. That means that the CMC of the cards, such as beck and call or breaking and entering, will be the total of two in all other zones. Essentially, the easy way for me to understand this is you treat it like X. Cards like Green Sun, Zenith, X is zero in all zones except on the stack. You're looking at the actual mana cost printed on the card, and X is zero until some cost is paid for it. Guys, I think this is a very grokkable, very understandable way to make this transition, and it always sort of befuddled new players or players who weren't really down in the weeds on the rules as to how the split cards actually functioned when it came to mana cost. I think anytime Wizards can streamline the rules and make the game cleaner, I'm not saying simpler or dumber or dumbing it down, because they're certainly not, but they're making the operations of the game cleaner. I think this is a win for everybody, Matt.
Absolutely. I mean, it was always a little bit counterintuitive about how those cards worked. You know, it was boom, bust, and Goblin Dark Dwellers.
Mm-hmm.
So wait, oh, I just use this one side, you know, but I can cast the other side, or Sensei's Divining Top, Counterbalance, and Wear and Tear. Now, a lot of people are complaining, as Dr. Jeebus put it, who is the angriest, you know, he will tell you he's the angriest Magic player on the internet. But he put it, he said, oh, sorry that your tier 3 deck in Modern sucks now. And sorry about spending $20 on all of the expertises and everything that you had to. I understand that people are like, well, wait a second, you know, I can't use the expertises and use breaking and entering anymore. Like, what's going on here? You know, that's jarring. It is. I understand that. I understand it sucks. You know, it's just like getting a card banned. It happens. So take a deep breath and just say, okay, is this more intuitive? Is this how it should actually work? How does this really affect the game?
Brian, where do you fall on this rules alteration?
I think it's absolutely the right call. Obviously, the functionality of this in especially Miracles is going to have a huge implication with the wear pair. Just float one card and it takes up two slots, basically, your one and your two. Not to mention all of the combos that have been done with the breaking and entering, the beck and call, et cetera, et cetera. Hurley, you're absolutely right. Take a deep breath. Look back. Is it better for the game? If the answer is yes, then we should all rally around this and say, yes, we're for it, and stop worrying about our short-term, quote-unquote, losses on this. We want to make gameplay as transparent and as straightforward as possible and not become a bunch of rules lawyers when it comes down to it.
Maybe this is why Wizards didn't do anything to Miracles on the latest banned and restricted announcement. They're looking at this as a way to level out the, okay, who are we kidding? Don't worry about it, kids. There'll be another banned and restricted announcement coming up after Pro Tour Amon Kett. That takes us up to In the Elevator this week. You know, this elevator is actually made out of glass. Yeah, you can tell because Hurley's always watching.
Brian suggested always watching. The reason that's important is with Exert now, you can actually attack and exert your creature. With always watching, you never actually tap it. Because of that, you can exert essentially for free. These are about a little over a dollar, like $1.25 or so. Anthem effect will always have some value. It's never going to be totally bulk. I would say, you know, pick up a couple playsets in trade. Always watching, pick them up, get your playset for $4 or $5.
Tangible Virtue. It should have been called Tangible Virtue. This week's In the Elevator, always watching on TryHards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew, and our brewmaster is going to take us back to the future of magic in Amon Kett. Brian, what do you got?
I'm going to cut my 2-week string of blue cards and turn to a red card from Amon Kett this week, something that I'm pretty excited about, even though I don't normally play these type of decks. The card I'm thinking about right now is On Crop Crasher. This is a Minotaur warrior creature, 1 red and 2 colorless. Haste, you may exert On Crop Crasher as it attacks. When you do, target creature can't block this turn. For a 3-2, guys, is this a card that could possibly put red or red deck wins, or as Sean likes to call it, spicy meatball, back into the conversation of tier 1 decks? Hurley, do you think On Crop Crasher has what it takes for Amon Kett?
First off, a 3-2 haste for 3. I would say at this current power level of Magic is kind of middle of the road. I think this is going to be a great filler at the 3-drop spot. You're going to want this in these decks that are, you know, topping out like Hazoreth the Fervent. You know, maybe you're playing the Cycling Lands. Maybe you're playing 2 colors with the Cycling Lands, so you're playing Flameblade Adept as well. But overall, I think that this one, especially once rotation happens, I think this one's going to see some good play. And if you can pump it in any way, you know, even if you have some warriors or something like that, you can pump that thing. It's going to be a really, really nice card.
Sean, what do you think? Is this going to bring red back up to its former glory?
Ooh, I don't know. This is a tweener in my mind. The fact that it's 3 on the casting cost, it might make it a little bit too slow. In my spicy meatball deck right now, would I love to have a 3-2 haste creature that has the falter effect attached to it? Can that falter effect sometimes be the difference in a game, especially when players are playing lifelink creatures that will really run red out of a potential win? Yeah, I think to make this card what red would want, what if it was a 2-1 with the same abilities but for 1 and a red? Would that be too good? Haste and a falter on a 2-mana body that's a 2-1. I think if that was the case, I'd be really excited about this. As it is, I'm looking at the other 3 drops in the deck going, I'm not sure if I want to take my curve up a little bit higher or if I want to just switch some 3 drops around. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Maybe it's just a different style of red deck that wants to be built with it. But I think haste, falter, and more power are always things that a red deck's going to be in the market for.
I'm intrigued by this card only because I kind of miss the days of just having those red decks in the format to kind of balance everything out. I know we've been lamenting the loss of control over the last few cycles of cards, let's say. Not that we want the hard control Sphinx's Revelation decks back, or maybe we do. But it was always nice to have, you know, a mono red deck or, you know, a red X deck in the mix to kind of stir things up. I know we've got Mardu vehicles, and some people might say that's exactly what this is. That's your red deck for right now. But I think we can do better. And I think something like this could maybe start the brewing process to get something. This is not Ash Zealot by any stretch of the imagination, but it's something worth thinking about if you can, you know, kind of blank your opponent's blockers as you start to get in some of that chip damage and maybe end with something like Glorybringer, you know, where they're exerting and taking out the other side of your board and crashing in for 7 or 8 a turn. That seems like something that Red could do very, very well with this set.
On Crop Crasher, our 3 minutes to brew this week here on Try Hard. Well, it looks like this is the last exit for this episode of Try Hards. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? Brian, I'm going to start with you.
Talking to a lot of the guys down at the shop when I was able to get down there to do a couple of trades, talking about events coming up, what cards people can borrow, and just kind of having those conversations of, sure, whatever you need, trying to be the best person I can. Doesn't really make me a better Magic player, but hopefully is just an example for what other people are rising to. And I want to say, again, the shout out to the Galesburg locals. Overall, great group of people willing to help each other through whatever. And I really, really like that spirit, so hopefully it's contagious.
Matt, what'd you do to get better?
Watch a lot of Modern. I still think Modern's not a good format.
You're just wrong.
I could be wrong, but I really think Modern's not a good format. Watching it, I was kind of actually thinking about your deck, Brian, looking at some of the metagame that was shaping up. Even though you'll be the one playing the deck in the team tournament, I want to be able to have enough familiarity with that deck to be able to advise you on decision points and everything like that. So I actually do want to take it out for a spin sometime, you know, in the next couple weeks, and you can sit kind of be yelling in my ear and tell me how terrible I am at Magic the entire time. The reason I'm not, I'm obviously the standard player, so I'm not focusing on standard because it's going to be shaken up in a couple weeks anyways. I do want to get familiar with it, but watching the Modern and watching some of the intricacies, especially with some of the green-white company, green-white combo decks, really helped out a lot to kind of understand that whole format.
You know what the metagame's always ready for? Pox. So we'll see if that turns out to be the case. As for me, what I did to get better at Magic this week, as I mentioned at the top of the cast, I realized that my involvement at the LGS level is about to tail off. So I just took a moment to let myself absorb the fact how much I love this game, how much I love being a part of this community, and kind of what that means to me. I'm still teaching my Padawan and bringing her along in the game, and I think she's just about ready for a trip to the LGS. Hopefully we'll be able to do that before I can't make any more appearances for a little while. So it's just, I think, understanding when you have something good and appreciating it, taking that moment to appreciate not just the game that we play, but the people we play it with, the role that it is taking up currently in our lives. And that role changes as we move on throughout our lives and throughout our careers, how involved we are with other things. And it means a lot. And it's something that's kind of kept me fresh and kept me going with this podcast. And I'm looking forward, of course, to many, 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 many more episodes here on Try Hards. Oh, you brave soul. You stuck it out for another whole episode of Try Hards. We are glad to have you. Check us out if you'd like to, patreon.com. We'll get ready to open the mystery box for the raffle next week here on Try Hards.